We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to RotoViz Overtime on RotoViz Radio, brought to you by Blue Wire. This is a special edition of RotoViz Overtime. We are doing our Q&A. We're not talking fantasy football. We're talking about some life stuff. You can get to know us. I can get to know Sean. Sean can get to know me. It's always a lot of fun doing these shows. We have a couple of them recorded so far, so I'm really looking forward to sharing these with our audience and obviously having these conversations with you, Sean. As I didn't mention at the start of the show, my name is Colin Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland, and of course you can find all of Sean Siegel's work up on rotoviz.com. But Sean, these have been a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to talking today about some very interesting questions, from if we won the lotto to when am I going to Lambeau Field to sci-fi and some book recommendations and things like that. So going to be a fun one. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, and definitely listeners, also let us know what your answers to these questions are. It's so fun to kind of interact with the community in that way. And Colm has such a good time with all of you on social media. And then, you know, we get to joke and laugh about all of the funny things that he has seen come in and all of the really cool answers that he has seen. So don't hesitate to reach out and also share your answers to these questions. Colm, this is going to be a fun one, because the listener questions for us in this episode, I think, are some of my favorites, and maybe we get a chance to be a little bit silly, but also give some of our book recommendations, that kind of thing. You know that I have some book recommendations for you, but we start off with a question here about the lottery. And so my question to you to start, Colm, is I assume that it's probably just the same, but is the lottery a big element there in Ireland? Do you guys have, you know, $100 million Powerball types of things? What is it like there in the UK when people are talking lottery?
So I think Ireland and the UK are probably similar in this fact. So obviously being to the US on a number of occasions, the state lottery seems to be the big thing over there. And that does be big, big money. Am I right in saying that can end to the hundreds of millions?
I think so. I mean, I don't track it that closely, but there's a lot of money out there.
And so basically, over the last, I don't know when this came in, but there is a thing called the Euro Millions, which is basically like a European lottery where prizes are astronomical. Those do go into the hundreds of millions at times. So that would be the equivalent, I believe, of the US state lotteries, or those big Powerballs. Like you mentioned, the Irish lottery then on its own, it actually got up to a record level where it couldn't go any higher a couple of months ago. But I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it might have been in the high double digits, so maybe 17 million or something to that effect. So it doesn't go to an astronomical amount. That is an astronomical amount of money, but in terms of the way it would be in the US, our lottery is also not owned by the state. It is owned by a company, I believe, from Canada. So it is a privatized industry, which is also kind of interesting. I don't know if that's the same anywhere else in the world, but so the lottery here, if I won it, that was gonna be my first question to you. If I won the lottery here, and like you, I don't do it very regularly, my wife does it sometimes, and we like to plan ahead as if we have already won it. But yeah, you're looking probably, you know, 6 to 10 million is usually the prize pool here, which is still a huge amount of money. But our answer, I think we should do our answer here based off, I don't know, 20 million. We've won 20 million, Sean. What are we doing? What's the first thing you're doing with that big bundle of cash?
Well, one of the things that I have mentioned is that, I mean, there's not a lot of stuff that I feel like I need. And you say that, and then you find out, well, you actually have a lot of stuff. So you're not exactly living an ascetic lifestyle, cloistered up, you know, in the mountains, going out to, you know, do your little gardening every day. But then, you know, if you had a bunch of money, that you wouldn't necessarily spend it on stuff, right? I mean, it'd be a big purchase. You'd get yourself you'd probably get yourself a mansion, right? Because then you can make everything else work from there. But no, my answer here is you've got to have a place. And so I don't want to come off as, let me start that again. So with a lot of the things that have transpired over the past, say, 5 years, it does, I think, make a person a little bit more interested in how they would prepare for the end of the world. And especially if you're going to be writing adventure novels and all of that type of thing, it's perhaps beneficial to have some knowledge about, you know, how adventures would work. And so I think that
Sean's going to build a bunker with his $20 million.
I mean, that would have to be one of the things you would consider, right? Is building a bunker. Now, I buy a bunch of land in the areas that are going to benefit from climate change. And you obviously don't know for sure that the models are going to be accurate, but we are going to see some transition in terms of where the best farmland is, where, as weather patterns change, you know, where the best climate is. You know, there are going to be some trade-offs with some of those elements, but you think about just how expensive property is and houses are in so many of the big cities in the US right now, and certainly the trendy cities. And then you contrast that with some places in the heartland that are still very, very inexpensive. Some of those places are going to absolutely explode over the next 30 years as, unfortunately, the climate does change. And if you can be out ahead of that, number one, I think it's going to end up being a fantastic investment. But then number two, also, you have some preparation for yourself and your family. If you're kind of thinking, well, you know, if you win the lottery, or if you think about it from the perspective of, you know, if my career is successful and, you know, there's some money to put aside for some things, then I think both making a good investment and, again, kind of creating some of these scenarios where, you know, your kids and your grandchildren, or, you know, if you don't have kids, your nieces and nephews and siblings and the extended family, if there are things that you can do to help pave the way for the next several generations to be in better shape, then I think that's pretty appealing. And it's an interesting intellectual exercise as well to try and figure out, you know, what's most likely to happen and, you know, what you should do to prepare for it. And so I think that, you know, if I had a big influx of cash at this point, I'd put it into some of these properties that, I mean, there are so many beautiful places in the US that are going to potentially even get more so as we look forward, you know, 20, 30, 40 years in the future.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting answer. I thought we could just both agree that we would max enter all of these fantasy football tournaments and that would be what we would do. But all joking aside, I don't do the lottery, but obviously we play in these contests. So let's say if we win, you know, Best Ball Mania 3 or the FFPC tournament this year, my thing is, if I ever come into a huge lump sum of money like that I would give some to my family, I think that I would split it up for all the things that they've done for me over the years. You've mentioned, you know, your family as well. I think that's something that I would do, is kind of try and share it around, especially if it was a crazy sum of money like that. I do think that, like we talked a little bit about traveling, you know, I think that's something that I would do more of. But yeah, it was a tricky question when I was trying to figure it out. I couldn't come up with a definitive answer. The first thing, and I did actually, some of these questions I said to my wife, I was like, you know, what would we do if this happened? And I think I mentioned on one of the recent shows, I have a mortgage for the house. So It wouldn't take the whole lottery amount to cover that, but I think, you know, paying that off would be a nice thing to not have to worry about. So that's probably the way that would go. But yeah, I think it'd be pretty nice, Sean. My thing with lotteries are obviously the interest in them is because you can win a massive amount. I always think when it's that massive amount, it would be better to give, you know, 10 people 1 million than to give one person 10 million. I think it would be a lot bigger prize. One of the lotteries I do play, it happens each and every new year in Ireland where they do like it's a raffle basically, but they do it for, there'll be a millionaire crowned kind of at midnight on New Year's Eve. And it's pretty much like a prize pool. Everyone buys a ticket, but then the prizes are guaranteed and people win smaller amounts. So I that's the kind of thing that I'd like to kind of go for, but I can't see the lottery companies deciding to follow my path. I don't think it makes as much money.
You said that the company runs the lottery there in Ireland. In order to be allowed to do that by the Irish government, is it a similar situation to at least the justifications that are given for the lottery in the States here, where, you know, supposedly a big chunk of that money goes to education and that kind of thing?
Yeah, now I don't know the terms of it. Previously, the Irish National Lottery funded a lot of like sports fields and different things in communities. And I believe that part of the agreement of them owning it, there is still a percentage of the funds that have to be allocated towards those sort of projects for mainly for like youth and community improvement. So I do think that we still have that element of it. I remember when I was younger, the soccer fields, for example, that I used to play on were really bad, and then they became really, really good, and that money came from the national lottery at the time. So yeah, positive things hopefully coming from it as well, but I'm sure there's lots of profits to be found there. The next question, Sean, could tie in with the lottery question. It is for myself. It's, when am I going to Lambo? I have split this question up because there was a couple of questions from this person, so I apologize, but I'm going to have to go back and find out whose name it is, Sean, because my answer is going to need to talk to them. So he splits the season tickets with his dad, who has been on the waiting list for 31 years before he got them. He said it's a must visit for any Packers fan. So my answer to this one is it is 100% on the bucket list, and I was able to see them a couple of years ago. I was shocked when I went back to look. It was actually 2013 in New York City against the New York Giants. So it was actually my wife's birthday that we went, and it was extremely cold. We probably were like three seats from the back of the stadium on the top deck. So really not ideal. And Aaron Rodgers was injured that season, so Scott Tolzien was the quarterback. It was a 27-13 loss. So not a good game to be at. Thankfully, the Packers are coming to London this year, so I'll be getting to go over to see that. So I didn't have to make the trip this year, but I'm hoping to get over to Lambeau in the next, say, year to 3 years. But my big question here is, was that an offer of a ticket to Lambeau Field? That's what I need to
Colin
find out.
Colin is trying to use the podcast to get himself tickets to a Packers game.
Yeah, so I will have to go back and search out, Sean, exactly the name here and reply to this email and beg for an opportunity to get a ticket.
You may have to come up with some very significant OT-related
guest appearance.
Yeah, to balance that out. Colin, the listeners also want to know what it's going to take to convince you that Brett Favre was better than Aaron Rodgers.
So I do think that an older generation will definitely take the side of Brett Favre. Obviously, there was the situation with Brett Favre leaving the Packers was quite messy, wasn't the cleanest, but thankfully that has been tidied up over the last couple of years. I think Brett Favre is one of the most fun players of all time to watch playing football. But in terms of Aaron Rodgers, he's kind of my generation of watching the Packers. So I think that's probably why I'm going to lean to him. And I also think that from a pure talent perspective, Rodgers, in my opinion, I think Mahomes is going to surpass that. I think he's the best thrower of the football of all time. I'm on the Packers or the Rodgers side of this. So, but I always think with Favre, I think he is, every time we look at a player who has struggled or hasn't succeeded so far in his career, I always think, yeah, Brett Favre, it really took him a good bit of time to get this NFL thing working out. So that obviously is something that I think of as his journey from the Falcons to the Packers, and how some of these players, we shouldn't be too quick to completely write them off in the NFL. But I don't know what it's going to take, Sean. I don't think I'm going to be convinced.
So no Brett Favre for you. Yeah, I mean, Aaron Rodgers.
Not that there's no Brett Favre, but Aaron Rodgers is my guy. As people will remember from the controversies over the last year, so Aaron Rodgers is my guy.
Yeah, you stuck right with him. I'm Brett Favre's gunslinging mentality, his willingness to do things out there on a football field that Aaron Rodgers doesn't have the guts to try, in part because he understands it's not the way to play. You know, the difference in leadership there, when you combine the fun and the leadership aspects, I'll go ahead and take Favre just so that we can balance this out on the program.
And Sean, I was frantically searching there to try and, I mentioned I missed the name. It was further down the show sheet when I went to the other questions. It was Paul Farley who sent in those questions. So Paul, need to know when I can get access to these Packers tickets for my big trip over to Lambeau Field. All joking aside, though, thanks, Paul, for sending in those questions. He is a longtime listener. We get lots of great questions coming in from Paul, so thanks again. I enjoyed the little bit of fun there we had divulging into the Packers side of things.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Sean, the next one up is into the sci-fi realm, and I know this is where you really, you have the edge on me here when it comes to books and sci-fi and classic literature, as is mentioned here. So I'll really let you take this. I'm not a big book reader. I'm an audio guy. That's my thing. I do listen to audiobooks from time to time, but I'm big into, podcast, TV, film, things like that. But I did actually go and listen. I believe, Sean, I think you may have recommended reading the book, but The Art of War by Sun Tzu. I did read that. I audio read it earlier this year. So that was one that I did enjoy if we're looking at books. But I'm more of a TV and film guy. And I actually, just before we started recording this, Sean, I watched John Wick, the first one today. So enjoyed that one if anyone's looking for any 2014 film recommendations.
So Colin letting us in on the fact that he is not a big reader. We're going to have to change that. We're going to have to get him going on some of these books. And I kind of want to do a rapid fire since we're in one of our non-football shows and give sort of a broad swath of books that might appeal to different listeners depending on the kind of thing that you like to read. And so we got a question here asking about sci-fi and classic literature, sci-fi, fantasy. We're going to go through a variety of these. To start with, let's look at some military thrillers, spy thrillers, just kind of depending. They're not exactly that. But the Gray Man column is currently out on Netflix. I haven't had a chance to see the movie yet. I am excited about it. It does have some star power. Some of the Netflix movies have been very, very good. A few of them have been fairly disappointing. But the Gray Man series by Mark Greaney is absolutely fantastic. Very, very readable. You know, that, one of the things that you'll find when you read some of these books is that writing is hard. And so if you have an immersive landscape in terms of the environment of the book and the language used in the book doesn't constantly jar you out of the story, then that's, I mean, that's great writing. It can be easy to understate the quality of what is often referred to as genre fiction. If you find yourself really immersed in the story, then the writer is doing a fantastic job. The Gray Man really balances a lot of things. One of the things that you run into when you read like a Tom Clancy, for example, is that there's some cool stuff there, but the books are way too long and there's not the right balance, or there's not the right balance for the general reader. Obviously, Tom Clancy has been wildly successful and has a huge following. So this isn't meant to lose us any Tom Clancy fans among the listeners. But and I think that the Gray Man author, Mark Greaney, actually worked with Tom Clancy on some of the books where obviously these established, and I think sometimes older authors who might be winding down in some way, they'll work to co-write some of these books. But anyway, The Gray Man, a very fantastic read. The Gray Man, a fantastic read and a quick read, and yet not one where everything feels, you know, very surfacey. To follow along that same path, Orphan X series by Greg Hurwitz is excellent, has a lot of the same characteristics. And then the third one I mentioned there, the Pike Logan series by Brad Taylor. The way that I got onto both of these last two is that Greg Hurwitz and Brad Taylor, both in different years, were at the Tucson Lit Festival. Really cool to get to see some of these guys in person, the dynamism that radiates off of some of the authors really makes you want to go out and check out the books, at least give them a chance. Brad Taylor, someone a former Special Forces background. And so you get a lot of that realism coming through in his novel. So anyone who likes books in that direction, I strongly recommend all three of those series. All told, that will give you, you know, 25, 30, 35 books to read. You won't be done anytime soon if you haven't started those. Sci-fi, and I may have mentioned a couple of these before, but I wanted to make sure we get some of the real top books here. Ancillary Justice and the Ancillary series from Ann Leckie is fantastic. Murderbot by Martha Wells, a series of novellas. And you might think to yourself, novellas, really? I prefer to read novels or, you know, read something else. I don't want something shorter. But those stories, it's like a really good episode of television. Writing novellas is hard. It's harder than writing a novel. You got to get in and you got to get out, and you've got to have a story and language, dialogue that is profound and memorable, right? You got to have some passages that are like quotes from your favorite TV series. Murderbot definitely has that. The Light Brigade by Cameron Hurley, a really cool story there. And then Termination Shock, the new book by Neal Stephenson. He's sort of a sci-fi writer and philosopher. Just the immense amount of information that he knows, it's just, it really blows me away. There's all kinds of quantum physics referenced in the book. I actually have a background in a degree in English and language. And so some of the things that he references from literary criticism and literary theory and philosophy, you know, I can pick up on because I have that background, but also so many things in science, just the depth of his knowledge across just so many different areas, right? Because just a true Renaissance person from the perspective of science and math and engineering. Termination Shock deals with sort of a climate disaster type of thing. A lot of listeners will probably be aware of the giant sort of sulfur hose to the sky where, you know, we could put some sulfur up there, reflect some of the sun rays, deal with some of the heating. Obviously, that's controversial because there are a lot of people who aren't in favor of adding even more stuff up into the air. Talks about that, obviously, in the novel. That's not exactly the solution that the protagonists come up with. But that's just the latest in a long series of just breathtaking and award-winning books from him. Fantasy, we've gone through some fantasy before, but I think some books that I may or may not have mentioned, Bloodsong from Anthony Ryan, Red Sister and Prince of Thorns, a couple of different series starts from Mark Lawrence. Both of those are fantastic. One of my favorite things from the podcast in the last couple of years is the listener recommendation of Joe Abercrombie, and have read some of his books. So if you haven't read him, check him out. And then the question also included classic literature. Having read a decent amount, that's not necessarily my favorite. I don't think that all of the plaudits that are necessarily attributed to the great authors of old are necessarily deserved, although there are plenty of things in there too that are quite solid. But contemporary fiction, contemporary literature is amazing, right? And so we're not necessarily talking about book club books here, although there's not necessarily anything wrong with book club books. I mean, you can obviously read those and enjoy them, especially depending on the book. But there are some really good books that I would mention quickly. The Girl in Green by Derek B. Miller. He's also written a series that includes Norwegian by Night. The language there, and again, the insight, just unbelievable. If you want a contemporary literature slash sci-fi, The Regional Office is Under Attack by Manuel Gonzalez is fantastic. State of Wonder by Ann Patchett. Mad Adam by Margaret Atwell. Wit's End by Karen Joy Fowler. One of the things that's a little bit of a theme through some of those is that you do have kind of the mix of contemporary literature and at least hints of sci-fi in some of those books. So definitely a combined genre that I do enjoy. Colin, there are so many other fantastic books out there. We'll continue to make book recommendations on the show. And also we continue to look for recommendations from the listeners. Being able to jump into some of those books has been a real joy over the last 2-3 years.
And Sean is going to get me off, or get me reading these books some of these days. It's eventually going to happen. Maybe I'll check. I'm sure most of them have audiobooks. We'll try that. But the second part of that question, Sean, came in around music, and they mentioned they're a hard rock fan. He said, what kind of music do you guys prefer? So I pretty much listen to anything and everything, and some of the bands that I would be, you know, big into. I'm a big U2 guy. I've seen them multiple times in concerts. I've been to Ed Sheeran a couple of times. Been a fan of him for a long time. And old school wise, I don't know if they ever fully, you know, crossed over to the US, but Thin Lizzy were a big Irish band back in the kind of 70s range, I would guess, long before I was born. But they were something that, you know, I got into as a teenager and my rock music. And currently Dermot Kennedy is somebody who's an Irish musician who seems to be breaking across into the stateside scene that I listen to a lot, and I would recommend that. But my dad is a massive country music fan, so I spent a lot of my early life listening to Elvis and Johnny Cash. So he had an influence on that on me, and I at the time I didn't really appreciate it, but now I do listen to them from time to time because it's like an earworm drilled into my head at this point. Sean, I might turn out to be the music guy, you might turn out to be the books guy. Who's on your music list here?
Yeah, well, I would definitely admit that I don't have nearly the depth of knowledge about music as I do, at least in theory. I mean, you like to think that you have some depth of knowledge about books or television if you partake all the time. But I like to listen to a pretty wide variety of music. Andrew Bird's Tenuousness always both impresses and cracks me up. It's a cool song, especially the beginning, and I'm always trying to think of ways to work that into a fantasy football article. You know, folk or folk rock is probably a genre that would come out toward the top there. And obviously a lot of these labels are going to be controversial for people who are hardcore music fans and know a lot about all of the different specifics and subgenres and exactly how you should define this and define that. I did have a chance to see Damien Rice in concert quite a while back at this point, and he was amazing. I think that kind of music is very listenable. And then I don't listen to the current version of these genres, but you know, as you're kind of scrolling through your Sirius XM radio and trying to find something, every once in a while I'll hit on some old school hip hop or country from the high school days or the college years, that type of thing. And it is interesting the way that music can just bring out such a wealth of feelings and emotions tied to, you know, memories that you have from the past. So you try not to get too deep in that, try not to get maudlin or anything to that effect. And I do think it's really cool now that listeners have so many different options for partaking of the type of music that they really enjoy, as opposed to being, you know, stuck with maybe the two or three radio stations that, you know, you get in your particular area.
I would agree with that. There's a lot of variety. That's the same, obviously, with sports as well. You know, it's become a lot more global. You can kind of get what you want when you want and watch it. But Sean, you mentioned there, you know, not listening to the current genres. Part of that, I think, I don't know if people listening would agree with this, but I know when I was in my teenage years and my early 20s, I would have kept up a lot more with the modern music. And, you know, I'm openly admit, like outside of the people that I like listening to, I don't really hear any of the modern songs outside of the likes of Ed Sheeran, who I like, or Dermot Kennedy, who I mentioned. And I think there's a big part, like you mentioned, with memories and nostalgia of going back and listening to those songs. And sometimes they bring you back to specific events, sometimes the specific feelings it'll make you feel. But I do think that I would say 90% of the music that I consume is from, you know, more than a decade ago. So like kind of my teenage years before that. So that probably, I don't know if that's just me, but that probably is part of it as well. And you always hear people's parents and it's not as good as it was back in my day, but you know, I think that's what I'm turning into at this particular point. But I do like some of the modern stuff as well. The other thing, Sean,
well, we all know that there's a window, right? Yeah. When, you know, between when you're 15 and 25, that's when the good music came out. The stuff before that is hopelessly naive and the production quality is too low, but the stuff beyond that is too bland and overproduced. And so, I mean, it only makes sense, right?
Seems like you've thought specifically about that before, Sean. The other one that you said was the modern genres of some of that music. You mentioned country music. Last year, you kept trying to get me to get Jonathan Taylor and DeAndre Swift on the same teams. I wanted one of these teams to be called Taylor Swift. You're not going to tell me that you're not a Taylor Swift fan, are you?
Well, I mean, everybody in the world is a Taylor Swift fan. But I mean, it's again, a situation where, you know, you go from...
She's blended all of that together, no matter what age you are, no matter where you're from. It's like she's blended all. What you mentioned about the problem, she's made them all disappear.
Oh, she has, has she? So the current stuff isn't bland and overproduced.
No, it's perfect.
Okay.
And that, so for all the Taylor Swift fans out there, hopefully they enjoyed that segment. We'll see if we get one of those Taylor Swift teams. Based on ADP, it's going to be very hard to make those happen this year, Sean, as well.
It will. And if you wanted that, you had to force the trigger on it last season. So
yeah, 2021 was the year. 2021 was our opportunity.
We just need one of those weeks. I mean, training camp offers all types of opportunities. DeAndre Swift pulls his hamstring, slides to the end of round two. We're golden.
we're set up then. But yeah, fun show, fun questions. Thanks to everyone who sent those in. We will be recording some more of these. They'll be coming out over the coming weeks. If you have any questions, send them in. We can't promise that we'll get them in this round, but we had been kind of storing these up over the last couple of months when we were getting these questions in. So thanks to everyone who submitted ones. My name is Colin Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland. My co-host, as always, is Sean Siegel. We'll have lots more fantasy football content coming your way, so make sure you are subscribed to the RotoViz Overtime podcast feed. And until we're back with another show, have a good one. Thank you for listening to Overtime on RotoViz Radio. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can contact us via email at rotovizradio@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz with a discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.